Welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network, coming to you from the TeacherCast studios since 2011. Join us each week as we bring you the latest educational news, EdTech updates, and hottest interviews with today's most influential leaders in education. And now, for your host, Jeff Bradbury.
And welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury. Thank you so much for joining us today and making TeacherCast your home for professional development. This is Digital Learning Today, a podcast for digital learning leaders and instructional coaches. And on today's show, we're going to be talking all about how artificial intelligence and math go together. AI, math. Well, we have a great guest on the show today to talk all about how he's revolutionizing not only the entrepreneurship journey for him and his family, but also how you can take that first step into becoming an educational content creator as well. If this is the first episode of TeacherCast you've checked out, don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. We love it when you're here, and we'd love to have you guys head on over to teachercast.net/podcast to check out all of our shows today. My guest today is an educator and the creator of The SAT Math Guy, a very popular YouTube channel. He's helped thousands of students worldwide boost their SAT scores with his expert strategies and proven techniques. He's also the creator of a fantastic platform called ActiPrep, and he is on a mission to expand access to effective standardized test prep that leads to improved life outcomes globally, one student at a time. And my goodness, he is absolutely doing it and kicking it every single day. I want to bring on today my good friend, Mr. Steven Johnson. Steve, how are you today? Welcome to TeacherCast.
Doing well. Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
I am so excited to have you on today. You've got this whole entrepreneur, teacher, help out the students. Before we get into all of that stuff, who is Steven Johnson?
Steven Johnson is a kid who grew up in the inner city of Los Angeles without a lot of role models, not a lot of great teachers, really, to be honest, around me, but had great parents and grandparents in the household who taught me the importance of education. And at some point along my journey, decided I wanted to be a part of inspiring the next generation of students who were looking to make something of their own lives. And eventually, through my own educational process and starting a tutoring company that worked with students K through 12 across all subjects, I landed in the world of standardized test prep because I saw too many students with great grades, in fact, who were finding themselves with limited options for the types of colleges and universities they could apply to because of the types of scores they were getting on the SAT and ACT.
Now, you mentioned that you landed on this SAT prep. I want to talk all about your entrepreneurial journey today, but what was it about math that got to you? Was it a strong suit? Was it something you did in college? Where did you come out of this and go, I want to help out in the field of math?
Very good question. Honestly, I was always very good at science. So I was pre-med in college. I attended UCLA, studied microbiology, immunology and molecular genetics there. But I remember being in either the seventh or eighth grade, struggling with algebra one. And my mother sat down with me every night for multiple weeks to explain to me how variables worked, how to solve equations, linear equations, nonlinear equations. And it was really the time that she took with me one-on-one, acting as my tutor, right? To make sure that I understood it in a way that my teacher, right, I'm sure they were doing the best they could given the class size and whatnot, but making sure that I had that additional support at home that allowed me to, that really unlocked my potential, that unlocked my thought process and allowed me to figure out how I learned best. And that's what led to me falling in love with math. And it wasn't just that I fell in love with math, it was that I fell in love with the process, like the struggle of dealing with, I'm not good at something, and I can work hard and become good at it. And you know, both of us, I'm sure, have heard so many students say, well, I'm just not a math person, right? Or my parents were not math people. I'm not a math person. I'll never be good at math. And so I saw it as a business opportunity, to be honest. So it was the meeting of those two things of seeing there's a large market out there of students, of families who are looking for help in math, and I saw that as a strength of mine that could help students get there.
Now, the website is vsatmathguy.com. It's a fantastic site, and also The Companion has a fantastic YouTube channel to it. But that didn't come naturally to you, did it? What came first, the website, the YouTube, the idea? How did you put all this together? What was that first entrepreneurial step?
So really the idea. So back in 2002, I started, like I mentioned, my tutoring company. And that company, like I mentioned before, evolved into test prep exclusively around 2007, 2008, where I was tutoring students one-on-one, SAT and ACT. But when the pandemic came, so, you know, 2020, and I was not able to meet with students one-on-one, I decided that I really needed to have a digital product. And at that time, I started to put a lot of effort and energy into creating and recording video explanations for SAT math. So that was the point at which the SAT Math Guy was birthed. So realistically, end of 2020, I started making videos kind of mid-2021 on YouTube.
What was that first video like?
The first video was really joyous because it had been such a long time in the making for me. It felt like, wow, I finally did it. It was also nerve-wracking, right? Because you put yourself out there, you wonder, will anybody watch it? Will anybody find it? How will someone find this? I don't know anything about SEO. I'm not advertising. I'm not paying for boosting my video or anything like that. I was really just committed to continuing the process, right? So for me, it wasn't a one and done type of thing. I decided early on that I was going to commit to making videos for every single official College Board SAT math question I can get my hands on. And it didn't matter if I had all the views in the world or no views at all. That was my commitment, and that's what I stuck to.
Now, your channel is interesting because I think, and correct me here, it's what they would call a faceless channel. It's just the content is on the screen, and it's your voice, and it's your heartbeat. And that seems, if I'm correct in this, that's your style, right? People come because they're looking to learn a little bit about how to pass these tests and how to do these equations. Why was that the option for you?
Really, it was my decision to do that because every other option became like an obstacle for me. It felt like thinking about starting a channel with my face on it, it's like, oh my God, I don't like the way I look on camera. I was concerned about how shiny my nose was, like just simple things that, you know, I feel now ashamed to even say out loud. But, you know, all of us have these automatic negative thoughts that come to our mind when we are getting out of our comfort zone. And for sure, I felt those things as I was thinking about creating this channel on YouTube and putting myself out there publicly for the world to see. So creating the Faceless channel was not some business model for me that I decided based upon, you know, doing some deep research. It really was just the only path that I could actually do. The one path forward that I could actually take steps forward and not stop myself from staying committed to the path.
What was that journey like for you from that first video to the second? You know, we talk in the podcasting world and say sometimes you don't have to publish it. You can record it and put it aside. Sometimes it's okay to record it a second time. We also say, you know, it takes 20 to 30 podcast episodes to get it right. What was that first couple weeks like, months like, however your production schedule was? What was the beginning of that like?
Oh, man, it was tough, Jeff. I stumbled over my words many times. There were many takes on single videos. I remember sitting in an office space that I had rented out just to have some peace and quiet away from my home so I can record these videos. And I think on a particular day, I recorded two videos over, I don't know, let's call it 5 hours of time, just because, you know, every take there was a mistake that I made in either some math error, some silly math error that I made on my own, or some stumbling over my own words. And it was in those moments that I was really cutting my own teeth on perfecting my own style and figuring out my own cadence. And really thinking back to it, it was those moments where it would have been very easy to give up. right? It was those in those moments, I had every reason in the world to tell myself, and I'm sure I did have the thoughts in those moments that it wasn't worth it, that, you know, see, I knew I wasn't good at this. And because it was only because I was committed to going from A to Z, right? From start to finish, I clearly defined where I wanted to start. I clearly defined where I wanted to end, and I removed any external validation. It's like, I don't need 1,000 views or 100 views. I don't need people commenting and telling me anything. In fact, what I told myself for my own why at that point in time, and my kids were much younger. I have kids right now who are between the ages of 7 and 13. So at that time, my kids were much younger. And I told myself, well, at some point, maybe at least my children will watch these videos. Maybe when they're in high school, you know, when they're preparing for the SAT, they'll watch these videos and they'll appreciate hearing their dad's voice explaining how to answer these questions. And that was my guiding light. That was really the motivation that kept me going. And as I continued to stumble over myself over those first few months, I slowly but surely got better and better and better at it. And I got to a point where I could produce, you know, 10, even 20, 25 videos per day at some point.
Now, 25 videos in a day is quite a feat. And that's coming from the guy that's doing sometimes three to five podcast recordings in a day. What your story is telling people is if you have an idea, go for it, right? As we're recording this right now, it's the beginning of the summer. I know there's teachers or entrepreneurs out there, entrepreneurs in waiting out there. I always clearly remember where I was 14 years ago. And it's like, are we going to do this or not? And you just go, we're doing this. What do you feel you needed to have to be successful? I'll tell you mine. It was when I said to my spouse, this is what I want to do. And she says, okay. What was your aha moment? What was your turning point where you're like, okay, I'm going to continue doing this?
So there were two moments. I think the moment before starting, which was just being, have you ever had that feeling of just, you know, I'm tired of putting this off. I'm tired of having the thought, having the idea, feeling the motivation, feeling the inspiration within, but then not executing, just not doing it, right? Like, I was getting really down on myself for that. So, like, so many people walk around life and not feel uninspired. It's like, I don't feel uninspired. I actually feel inspired, and I'm not acting on the inspiration that I have, right? That's killing me inside just to even feel that. So that was one thing. I felt like that feeling internally came to a head. And then once I got started, it was that, you know, I felt myself getting better at it. I felt myself improving. It truly is, I think, a true statement when you hear terms like, or sayings like, you know, it's all about the journey, right? It's not about the destination. It's all about who you become in the process of, you know, as you head towards those dreams and goals that you have for your life, not the actual attainment of that dream. And I started to experience that for myself. And then I became addicted to it, right? Once you start to feel like, wow, this is changing me. It's not just the number of videos, or I'm going to become, you know, the next Mr. Beast on YouTube, right? All those things start to fall away fairly quickly as you realize who you are, what your capabilities are, what your capacity is. But you start to fully recognize that you're changing. And I'm very big on personal growth, personal development, and I want to inspire my children as well. I want to be an example to them of someone who never gives up on themselves, of someone who is always looking to improve themselves.
You know, you're basically describing something that we were talking about in a previous episode, which is, you know, Simon Sinek calls it the infinite game.
Yes.
You are out there and you're battling yourself. Can I do this? Can I do one more? Nobody ever says, I want to do 30 videos in a day, but can you do this at a high quality? Now, I do want to take a step back here because we had talked before the recording. I want to nerd out a little bit. You're creating this YouTube content for those who have to ask the question, are you scripting? What applications are you using? What's your video? Give us the 30-second overview of what's in your YouTube toolbox. How does it work from start to beginning or start to end?
Sure. So I'm literally just using a whiteboard app on my iPad with an Apple Pencil and a voiceover recorder, right? So I'm recording on the whiteboard as I write the question. So I take a screenshot of a SAT question, I pop it on the whiteboard, and I'm just recording my voice as I write out that answer, and I'm posting it straight to YouTube. It's extremely simple. When I first started, I was not even putting thumbnails on my YouTube videos. It wasn't until a subscriber sent me a private message one day and said, hey, maybe you should, you know, add some thumbnails to your videos. And I said, oh yeah, that's probably a good idea. That might help drive some additional subscribers here. But even that, I mean, I think is a sign of my motivation, and to kind of quote Simon Sinek again, my why wasn't in really building the subscriber base. It was in just doing the work. I see myself as wanting to be part of the fabric of test prep, and wanting to not rely so much, not that there's anything wrong with this, but not to rely so much on personality, but to rely more on the value that's provided to the end user, right? So when a student is looking for an answer to a question, that they find that answer immediately and that I'm providing that answer to them.
If you have any questions that you would like to have Stephen Johnson ask, you can head on over to his website, thesatmathguy.com. Fantastic website, fantastic YouTube channel. Steve, I want to take a quick moment here and pivot a little bit, because this is the time where all of our teachers are trying to figure out what is coming up ahead. Where are we going? What kinds of things are our students going to be getting in trouble with as the year progresses here? So let's just talk about artificial intelligence for a moment.
Let's do it.
The question that we have, even in the school district that I teach, should we be bringing it in? What should it look like? And again, this is the calculator question from back when we were kids, right? Should we be teaching artificial intelligence? But I'll even open it up to your subjects here. Should we be showing kids how AI can support their education, specifically in math?
I say yes to every question that you mentioned. Yes, we should be bringing it in. I think that education for too long has lagged the technological advances of the world around and every other field surrounding education. And the students that we serve are at the cutting edge typically of education, of technological advances, right? So there's friction there, right? So we're serving a population that is typically first movers in technological advancement, and we want to be last movers, right? So that is a problem. So I think that with the advancement of artificial intelligence, as teachers, we have an opportunity to, first of all, learn how to use tools ourselves. So learn how to use tools like ChatGPT, Claude, how to use these tools that are out there, and then to bring our learnings to our students. I think that's maybe the easiest way to start with providing assistance and providing pathways and bridges of education to the students that we serve is, well, how am I using it, right? So the way that I use artificial intelligence when it comes to math specifically is to personalize or to expand on problem sets, right? So if I'm looking at a particular math problem and I'm let's say showing a student how to answer a circle equations question, and we're going through three or four example questions, and I want to, or I believe now that student is ready to apply what they've learned, and I want them to see an additional 10 to 15 or 20 questions, I think AI is a great tool to use to then generate those additional questions, right? But also, there's the ability for you to create a chatbot through artificial intelligence, right, through using AI that can then act as the tutor for that student if they have any challenges as they're answering those questions on their own as well. So this is the way that I'm using it. A lot of students are already using it that way as well, just naturally as they're shifting their behaviors away from Google search and towards especially ChatGPT as they're querying the web to find answers to their questions. So I think that's the start of it. But there's so many tools out there nowadays, and I think that teachers have to figure out exactly what works for them And if you find that it works for you, it most likely will work for your students. And if you're excited about it, your students will be excited about it.
Now, I got to pivot one more time here because that sounded like a really good answer from an educator. Okay. You are now the father of a high schooler.
Yep.
I am now the father of a middle school set of kids. What would your answer be for that? Because I'm looking at this from my point of view going, no, I still need my kids to know long division. I get the calculator. I get all those things. I get that somebody can take their iPad and a pencil and it's, but I still need my kids to know how to tie their shoes, right? Do you have a different answer for that? I'm curious, as a parent versus as an educator?
Honestly, I don't. So with my high schooler, so for instance, so my high schooler, well, she's entering high school this coming year. And when I talk to her about using AI tools, it really is, it's the interface of, it's, I think the conversation lies in how is a student using it, right? So if you're using it in a lazy way, which is, hey, ChatGPT, what's the answer to this question? Okay, copy, paste, done. Then that's not the proper use of it. That is not the best use of the tool. It's a use of the tool, and it's probably the most common use of the tool, especially for a student of that age, if they're unsupervised, right? So it's my responsibility as her parent and my responsibility as a teacher to fold in even the teacher response back into the parent response. It's our responsibility as adults to show how, what is the responsible way to use these tools. So again, if we're learning how to do long division, then if there's a long division question that's presented in class and I say, hey, sure, go to ChatGPT, let's type in this question, let's take a picture of this question, upload this question in ChatGPT and ask, what are the steps to answer this question? Have those steps laid out. Now, I want you to go through those steps, and now let's have another question on the board and see if you can now answer those questions by you answer this separate question using the steps that ChatGPT presented. If you find yourself getting stuck, I want you to now prompt ChatGPT again to further explain the step where you got stuck. Right now we're personalizing because you would assume that multiple students may get stuck at multiple different locations or multiple different spots along the way. So I think this is closer to a healthier way of using the tool so that you're not just copy paste and you're actually using it as an assistant to your knowledge and to your learning.
As somebody who works a lot in AI, like I know you do, what applications do you tend to favor? Obviously different applications are for different things, but do you have are you a ChatGPT person? Are you a Copilot person? Like, what do you turn to when you're trying to plan things out, when you're trying to lesson plan, when you're just trying to figure this world out?
I'm definitely a ChatGPT person, for sure. I am excited for the upcoming school year. I'm working on some custom GPTs. A lot of folks, especially in the teacher world that I speak to, are not aware that you can customize your own GPT and deploy it to your students to use in the classroom and outside the classroom. So, you know, thinking through how you as a teacher can think of your own knowledge as a large language model itself, and, you know, your lesson plans, your assessments, your rubrics can be fed into ChatGPT or fed into your own custom GPT that can then be utilized to be trained as a tutor that the student can use at home as part of for their homework, that can be trained to maybe not provide answers but only provide guidance, right? So there's so many different ways that you can take these tools and customize them for your own use and make sure that your students are getting the most out of it without it becoming, again, just a copy and paste and cheat code for those kids.
What advice do you have for parents who are facing the fact that their kids are out there experimenting with AI?
Get involved. I would say get involved. I mean, an example for me, and it feels so antiquated now, but, you know, and I'm on YouTube now, which is funny, but, you know, when my kids first started watching YouTube videos, it's like, oh my God, turn that off. You know, there's so much more to life than watching endless YouTube shorts on repeat all day. Right. So you're aware of this, right? So I think it's like most things. Every generation has this divide between, you know, what we grew up watching, what we grew up being entertained by, what we grew up taking our attention, and what our children are experiencing in real time. And at the end of the day, our children, I believe, want us to be more involved in their lives than maybe they let on, and maybe they're willing to actually articulate to us. But if we become interested, become curious about what they're interested in, I think that just bridges the gap just a little bit. And even if it doesn't fully bridge that gap, we're at least more aware of what they're doing. And that helps to lead to better, more informed communication, more informed conversations with them down the line.
If you guys out there listening have any questions about this or any topic on AI, please feel free to reach out to us. The website is thesatmathguy.com. Stephen, what's your new school you're looking forward to? What do you have coming up in the future, and what can we expect from your channel and from your YouTube?
Great. So school year wise, so last year, like you mentioned, I taught math. I actually taught pre-calculus, Calc 1, and multivariable calculus. This next coming school year, I'm teaching entrepreneurship, which I'm very excited about. I'm also teaching finance, which I'm also very excited about. On the YouTube front, I'm continuing to build that channel, the College Board, which, you know, creates the SAT, is continuing to produce more practice materials for students. So that keeps me busy with keeping up with my commitment to having an answer for every math question that they have out there for students to study. I have a private membership also on YouTube that students get additional resources as well that is not on the free channel. And then Active Prep, which you mentioned earlier today, which is really the proof of concept for a grander vision that I have for a large test prep platform that'll cover starting with SAT, but move into ACT, possibly also other tests like the GRE and GMAT and things of that nature, which is, again, part of my larger vision of just helping students around the world to not allow these standardized tests to keep them away from their dreams.
All the links that we just mentioned are going to be over on our show notes. You can find out more information over at teachercast.net/podcast. Steve, thank you so much for your time. Please invite yourself back anytime, and would love to continue this conversation as we move through this crazy AI world.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me. This was fun.
And that wraps up this episode of Digital Learning Today. If this is the first time you're listening, please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button and share this episode with your friends and colleagues. You can find all the archives over at teachercast.net/podcast. And one more time, on behalf of Stephen and everybody here on TeacherCast, my name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.
You've been listening to the TeacherCast Educational Network, hosted by Jeff Bradbury. Please reach out to the show with all of your questions on Twitter at TeacherCast or online at www.teachercast.net. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And please take a moment to write a review in the App Store.